DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, before things get crazy and we start flying here and there with all the big topics and points of conversation around Georgia football for today, let me remind you that there is still a little bit of time, but not much, to go online to DogNation.com, register for your chance to win a Dog Nation Invasion to Baton Rouge giveaway, courtesy of our friends at Marlowe's. And if you're curious about whether or not you win or not, or if you want one more chance in person to register, the night to remember is tomorrow, Thursday night, as I sort of record this and broadcast here on a Wednesday. Dog Nation going to be back at the Marlowe's Tavern in Brookhaven, one of our favorite Marlowe's Tavern locations. We're going to be there tomorrow from 6 to 8 p.m., the very first ever Marlowe's appearance for Mike Griffith, our buddy from DogNation.com, who's going to be with us in just a moment here to talk about a lot of stuff here on this Wednesday. But Mike going to be with us tomorrow. It's 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta. That's 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta for our Marlowe's big game preview. We'll talk about the Dogs' upcoming game on Saturday against Missouri. And we will give you one more chance to register for our Dog Nation Invasion of Baton Rouge giveaway, courtesy of Marlowe's Tavern. And we will announce the winner live from 6 to 8 p.m. tomorrow there at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. So please be a part of that. Show up wearing your red and black. You'll be given a complimentary appetizer, courtesy of our friends at Marlowe's. We'll have T-shirts and a lot of stuff like that to give away as well. If you've never been to a Marlowe's event with Dog Nation, you're going to love your first appearance. And for those of you who are on your way back, welcome back. We look forward to seeing you there tomorrow. And I know you'll enjoy Mike Griffith for a very candid sort of off-air conversation. Mike's going to really let it rip and let it fly. You'll really, really like that. All right, with that out of the way, let me turn my attention to kind of where I want to start today. And I want to talk a little bit about Jake Fromm, because I think that the Georgia quarterback here is sort of maybe flying under the radar a bit. I mean, let's face it. Georgia hasn't, as of yet, really needed Jake Fromm all that much this season. So therefore, when you sort of have the more relevant conversations about Georgia football, Fromm's name just doesn't come up very much. Georgia's blowing out opponents. A veteran quarterback is sort of more important than a close game. And frankly, I don't know when Georgia's going to play a close game. I don't think it's going to be this Saturday. I don't think it could really be any of the next 3 weeks. But just because Fromm is not being called upon to make big throws in big close games right now doesn't mean that he's not having maybe a better season than you realize. An example of that for me was, and I have to admit I was pretty surprised by this, to read Mark Schlabaugh, ESPN.com. They were doing kind of a deal on the, you know, once again, you sort of lump, you know, the Georgia quarterback situation into the Alabama deal with Tua and Jalen and the Clemson deal with Kelly Bryant and Trevor Lawrence, and ESPN kind of rang that bell again this week. But the guy that was sort of tasked with writing about the Georgia portion of this, Schlabaugh, ends up bringing up a stat on Jake Fromm that I hadn't quite realized, the pace that he's kind of on right now. So as a way of kind of getting this conversation started, let me show you a sentence that I read at ESPN.com yesterday from Mark Schlabaugh, a guy that knows Georgia well for a number of years. He writes about Fromm. Through three games this season, Georgia sophomore Jake Fromm is completing 80% of his passes, which leads FBS quarterbacks and would surpass the SEC single-season record set by former Kentucky star Tim Couch in 1998. So interesting stuff there from Schlabaugh, that the 80% completion percentage that Fromm's on right now, if he can maintain that, which is a very difficult thing to do, but if he could maintain that, it'd be the highest mark ever in SEC play. And where it stands right now, it'd actually be, if I look at the numbers correctly, yesterday on sportsreference.com, the highest completion percentage mark in all of Division I college football history. So Fromm right now is on a pretty good pace. You may not notice, because these throws aren't coming in sort of the crucial moments of games, and he's only playing part of these games because Georgia's got such a big lead. But when Fromm is throwing it, he's completing it right now at a pace that really hasn't been seen all that much. And I think that's important to sort of bring into the discussion about Fromm, because in other areas of Fromm's game, it almost seems like he's sort of taking some, I don't want to say criticism necessarily, but, you know, I think there is this continued fascination with how Fromm is performing as the starter, given the fact that Justin Fields, the backup, is sort of a fan favorite. This is not a unique story to Georgia. This is one of the oldest football storylines that there is. You know, the backup quarterback is supposedly sort of always the most popular player on any roster from that standpoint. That natural curiosity may be a little bit extra with Fields, given the fact that he was one of the top prospects in the country for the 2018 class. But I think the point here is that praising Fields shouldn't come at the expense of somehow criticizing Jake Fromm, really, for anything, given the fact that he sort of picked up on the 2018 season, much where he left off in the 2017 season. Now, in terms of some of the maybe criticism or pointed questions that have been asked about Fromm's performance thus far this season. There's the issue on Saturday of, did he hold on to the ball too much? Couple throws where maybe he should have let go of the football, ends up leading to a sack, or in one case, a fumble. Was Fromm holding on to the football too much on Saturday against Middle Tennessee State, not getting rid of it quickly enough? Well, here's what Kirby Smart had to say about that postgame.
One time we got beat in protection, so that was on the protection. We're in a base protection, seven-man protection. He should be protected. He should be able to hold the ball. But the other one, they played a coverage that took away what we did on the route structure, and he had nowhere to go with the ball. We'd love for him to throw it away a little earlier and not take the sack there, the second one.
One of the things that we don't do a lot of here on Dog Nation Daily, and I'm sort of proud to say that we don't do this, is we don't play the blame game a lot of, well, that wasn't so-and-so's fault. That was actually so-and-so's fault. I just think there's an element of that that's tacky. You know, it's not that I ever want to sort of dodge an issue facing Georgia. If Georgia loses a game, let's talk about why it happened. I mean, that's obviously open game here. But on a fumble ultimately recovered by Ben Cleveland, one thing we don't sort of dive into a lot is, was Fromm to blame for holding on to it, or was Cade Mays to blame for whiffing on the block, or was that Charlie Werner's fault because he was supposed to help out there and he didn't? Honestly, you know, there's an element of that we just sort of leave alone around here from time to time. So I don't know if Jake Fromm held the ball too much on that or not. It sounds like Kirby Smart sort of thinks that he didn't. Maybe on another throw, maybe he feels like that Fromm could have made a slightly different decision than he did. But overall, I mean, if that's what we're getting into when it comes to Jake Fromm's game thus far for 2018, we're sort of getting into the weeds just a bit here. And frankly, we're starting to nitpick a bit as opposed to just sort of appreciating what is a quarterback now. If there was no such thing as Justin Fields, we on this show over and over again would be talking about how much Georgia's in good hands with a now veteran quarterback who's proven that he can get the job done for a UGA. But obviously in the real world, there is Justin Fields and there is Jake Fromm. They are both on the roster at the same time, and there will be this natural curiosity of which guy should be starting over the other, and is the right guy doing that, and is he doing enough to sort of maintain his lead over the hungry backup who's fighting for more playing time. On Monday, when Kirby Smart met with the media for his weekly press conference, he sort of gave his evaluation of how really both these guys are doing right now.
I've been pleased with both guys. I think both guys are improving. Both of them have room for improvement. They both continue to work hard and prepare. I think the biggest thing for each one of them is, can you continue to prepare at the right level so that you're prepared for every situation you could be presented in the game?
So obviously what that is to me is an example of Kirby Smart sort of not buying into the narrative. This is once again like something we talked about a lot during the offseason of, when Kirby Smart speaks about these quarterbacks, he speaks about them both together. He doesn't separate the analysis here and say, I'm going to say a few things about Fromm. Here's what he does well. Here's what he needs to improve on. Here's what Justin Fields does well. Here's what he needs to improve on. That's not the way that Kirby Smart speaks about this. He always lumps them together because he doesn't want to give fodder to the who's the right guy for Georgia, Fromm or Fields conversation. In this particular aspect, while I normally sort of lean in the direction of hoping that Kirby Smart will be candid, I actually sort of don't really mind him, refusing candor here with this particular answer, because there is a narrative that emerges with Jake Fromm and Justin Fields that I continue to think is somewhat unfair. I talked about this last week. I'll say it one more time. You should not lump Fromm and Fields at Georgia into the same category of Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa at Alabama and Trevor Lawrence and Kelly Bryant there at Clemson, because at both those programs, Clemson, Alabama, the quarterback that had been there longest, Hurts at Alabama, Brian at Clemson, had done at least enough to question whether or not that quarterback should actually deserve to be the starting quarterback there for the program. In the case of Alabama, the answer became a resounding no. It shouldn't be Jalen Hurts anymore. It should be Tua Tagovailoa. In the case of Clemson, it's still somewhat murkier. Right now, Bryant and Lawrence are essentially putting up the same stats here, so there may be some debate. But at Georgia, right now for Jake Fromm, he has done nothing at any point this season, or certainly last season when he was a starting quarterback, to ever suggest that, well, maybe a different quarterback would be better for Georgia in games. At some point in time, that may happen. But as of right now, that it's not. That's an independent evaluation of Fromm that's got nothing to do with Justin Fields, who has been impressive when he's got a chance to play. But in the case of Jake Fromm right now, his incumbent status isn't threatened by anything that he's doing. And by the way, one more point on all of this. you know, in terms of why maybe Jake Fromm's not getting a lot of attention right now, both I think from Georgia fans and maybe from some people around the country there as well. It's been a bit of a strange season for Georgia thus far, and maybe it's going to be a lot of strange games to come and strange years in the future also. Georgia's just blowing everybody out. It's scoring 40-plus points in all three of its games thus far. Nothing of consequence is really happening much in the second half at all, and definitely not happening in the fourth quarter. So much so that Cole Kubelik from the SEC Network and the sports radio station WJOX tweeted this out yesterday in terms of, speaking of Tua Tagovailoa, he and Jake Fromm right now have something pretty significant in common. Neither have attempted a pass in the fourth quarter thus far this season. So we haven't seen that from Fromm yet, but at some point in time we will. Will it happen on Saturday against Missouri? I don't know. I'm guessing that Georgia probably blows them out too. Tennessee, Vanderbilt, much the same way. I wouldn't expect that to happen at LSU. That game's going to be close. I think the same thing's probably true about Auburn in November, maybe another surprise game sort of thrown in there. It's really in the fourth quarter of games against close opponents where things start to really matter here. And as much as I like Justin Fields and believe he's going to have a very bright future at Georgia, the guy I want throwing passes in a fourth quarter, in a close game, when you finally get to one, for me, that guy is still Jake Fromm. My name is Brandon Adams. It's Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. And I'm glad to have you with us, no matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter feed, on the radio at noon, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, in podcast form, wherever podcasts can be found, the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player for the Android devices, the world-famous DogNation.com, SoundCloud, however you get to us, good to have you with us. And I hope you've enjoyed some Marco's Pizza here. You know, tonight my wife is going to be gone. She's not going to be at home, so my kids are already getting excited. Because when Mama's away, Marco's Pizza is usually what comes in to save the day here. And why would you not? When you can say hello, Primo, with two medium, two-topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. And listen, you know, it's as I've said before, this is not just any pizza. This is authentic Italian-quality pizza made fresh every day. Three cheeses blended together, melted on top of that authentic Italian crust. The Giammarco family recipe and the sauce. This is good stuff, and you'll love it yourself. So go to Marcos.com, take advantage of the offer. No coupon to clip, no promo code to remember. Just every store, every day, the Italian way. We love Marco's Pizza around here, and we know that you will love them as well. We're going to have Mike Griffith coming up in just a moment. A lot to get into with Mike, including the update from him on what Kirby Smart said yesterday about Georgia left tackle Andrew Thomas still dealing with his injury. We're going to get into some of that with Mike and a whole lot of other subjects there to come. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse here, brought to you on Wednesday by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And it's kind of interesting, while we are sort of, you know, right in the middle, I mean, smack dab in the middle here of the 2018 season for Georgia. The announcement was also made yesterday about the upcoming 2019 schedule for Georgia. And it was kind of funny to see a lot of Georgia fans sort of push pause on their either excitement or concerns for this season to sort of think a bit about the 2019 schedule. And I think there was a schedule that could have been released yesterday that probably didn't get a lot of attention, not really, you know, generating too much chatter. I think something about the 2019 schedule, though, is going to get a lot of people talking, because from a Georgia standpoint, it's just a good bit different from what we're used to seeing. In fact, on video, let me show the schedule to you. If you're listening radio or podcast, you probably have already seen it, but I'll give you some of the highlights here. Georgia opens the season on the road. That doesn't happen a ton. At Vanderbilt, as early as I can ever remember, Georgia going to Nashville there. That's a little bit of difference. Obviously, we already knew that Notre Dame was coming to Georgia on September 21st, but to see that there in print also kind of gets you a little bit excited in that regard. A little bit interesting that Georgia will play Texas A&M in November. First time these two teams have played since A&M came to the conference in 2012. I believe it's Texas A&M's first trip to Athens since 1980, a year that in which Georgia won the national championship. Y'all check my math on that, but I believe I'm also correct on that. I told our buddy Connor Riley yesterday that I don't think that Georgia's probably ever played a ranked SEC team after it's played Auburn, but on this 2019 schedule, I think that's going to be the case. I believe that A&M will probably be ranked in the top 25. As a lot of people pointed out, there are a lot of bye weeks for SEC opponents before they play Georgia. That's a little bit of a challenge. It's something that Alabama's gotten used to a lot in recent years, and something that I guess that Georgia's going to be dealing with here a little bit as well. There are also two bye weeks for Georgia here also. Georgia will have a bye week before Tennessee and then a bye week before Florida too. So it's a little bit of a weird schedule for Georgia, and frankly, kind of a fun schedule, especially on the home slate. I imagine tickets will be pretty hot for at least the Notre Dame and Texas A&M game, if not a whole lot more to come on there as well. I would imagine that Georgia probably will, you know, thought of as having a bit of an easy schedule this year. My guess is that Georgia's probably thought of having maybe a little bit more difficult schedule there for 2019. So kind of interesting stuff there as we go around the doghouse, brought to you today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And speaking of Engineered Solutions of Georgia, you know what they are known for, providing foundation repair, basement waterproofing, and crawl space encapsulation. They also offer a lifetime of support, so you want to give them a call right now. It's 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now. You can have one of their qualified professional technicians come out to your home and check on whether you've got a cracked foundation, a wet basement, or a damp crawl space. They know how to get it done. They're the only foundation repair company the Dog Nation would trust, and the reason why we trust them is because they've got a full-time engineer on staff. So that big problem that you feel like you're facing at home, it's got you worried, it's got you staying up at night, trust someone who's got a full-time engineer on staff. Trust Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and great to have you with us here as we go around the doghouse on a Dog Nation Daily. Also great to have Mike Griffith coming up as well. Looking forward to being with him tomorrow night at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven, as I told you a moment ago. Let's find out about everything that's happened at Georgia practice this week as the Dogs get ready to go to Como on Saturday, Columbia, Missouri, to take on the Tigers. Let's talk to Mike Griffith right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Say hello to Mike Griffith, our buddy from DogNation.com there in Athens, just really grinding and hustling to bring you the best Georgia coverage of DogNation.com every day. And Mike, there's a lot I want to talk to you about with the team and kind of what's been going on this week and kind of where the storylines are sort of set as Missouri is the host here on Saturday. But before that, though, let me at least squeeze this in for a moment. I've heard from so many people who are so excited about the fact that you're going to be with us at Marlowe's Tavern in Brookhaven tomorrow night. You know, we always do the sort of off-air Q&A. People know that you're very candid and very direct in some of the things that you write at Dog Nation, what you say here on Dog Nation Daily, and they know you're going to be really brilliant in the heat with some inside stuff tomorrow night for that special off-air conversation, the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. So let me just say on behalf of the rest of Dog Nation, really looking forward to spending that time with you tomorrow night.
Yeah, me too, Brandon. You know, there's a lot to talk about. It's such an exciting time for Georgia football. And, you know, even though I think we're all pretty sure they're going to end up in Atlanta in the SEC championship game, there's so many questions with this team, and they've got so far to go before they get there.
Yeah, I think that's right. And one of those questions is something I know that Kirby Smart spoke to you guys a little bit yesterday after practice was over. The status of Andrew Thomas for Georgia fans who've, you know, I think been thankful for the depth that Georgia has along its offensive line, but hoping to hear some good news on Thomas soon. Sounds like Kirby hasn't really delivered that good news yet this week, has he?
Yeah, you know, Andrew was out there, but he wasn't really going live through the drills. I mean, it takes time, and, you know, the last thing you want to do is bring him back too soon, because you certainly want to have them for the stretch drive. And, you know, well, this is an important game. They're all important games, Brandon. But if the guy's not 100%, he's not 100%. And, you know, playing that left tackle position, you know, requires some explosion, some quickness, and great footwork, because you're going to get a lot of speed off the edge there. And I just don't know if he'll be ready by Saturday based on what I saw yesterday at practice.
Yeah, ultimately my thought on this, Mike, is that, you know, Georgia needs Thomas back at some point in time, but, you know, even though, you know, Missouri's sort of the next thing in line for Georgia, and there's a tendency to sort of, you know, overinflate the opponent just because of the fascination that fans have about the game, the truth is, I still think Georgia should win this game fairly easy on Saturday. I saw a Missouri team struggle at Purdue. That's a warning sign for me. That team's not ready for what it's going to see from Georgia. Dogs will play close games at a certain point. I don't think it's Saturday against Missouri. So from that standpoint, I guess I don't mind, you know, Kirby resting the ankle of Thomas if that is indeed what ends up happening.
Yeah, you're going to want him back for bigger games, certainly. Oh, yeah. For that trip to LSU and, you know, maybe even Vanderbilt.
Yeah, no, we'll certainly see about that, but certainly the LSU game looms large for Georgia. Something that I am really curious about, though, and you got a glimpse of this at Georgia practice yesterday, involves freshman wide receiver Kiaris Jackson, who has always, Mike, to me, been sort of a different-looking wide receiver. I think for people that read about these recruits on their way to Georgia but don't really see them in person, when you actually see Jackson in person, he looks a little different than you think he might. He's sort of thought of as a slot receiver, but this is a pretty thick guy. This is a 200-pounder here, a guy that can, you know, conceivably pack a wallop in terms of, you know, lowering his head and lowering his shoulder on somebody. And I guess he's gotten a few reps here and there at the running back position at practice this week. What do you make of all of that?
Yeah, you know, a couple things. You know, just the depth in general at the position, one. I mean, I guess we're all kind of wondering what's really going on with DeAndre Swift. I mean, I know Kirby said they're 100% at the running back position, but what does that mean? There's a lot of different ways we can interpret that. And if there was something wrong with DeAndre Swift, would we really expect Kirby to disclose that before this game? So I don't know. I don't know if Swift's maybe not completely feeling like himself, and Kirby just wants to make sure he's got the depth. You know, it could just be looking at the personnel. What is there, 19 or 20 receivers on the roster? And, running back's a little thin now with Zamir White's injury. So maybe it just makes sense from a numbers standpoint. And as you said, Kerr's a guy that can do running back things. And if you look at how Georgia uses the running back, they throw the ball a lot to the running back. So I don't think it's that strange at all. I think Kirby Smart and his staff are really good at knowing where to place guys. I mean, obviously, look at Mecole Hardman and how good he's turned out at wide receiver since his move. I like the move. I think it's a smart move, and it may be a necessary move just in terms of the numbers.
Yeah, I want to talk to you more about running backs in a couple of minutes, but just as a quick follow-up to what you're saying there, I've said this a couple times this week. I think it's really weird that if you go back to the summer, Mike, one of the dominant conversations that fans wanted to have with me is, how is Georgia going to manage the fact that it had too many running backs? The time you were thinking about Zamir White, obviously Holyfield, Harry and Cook, and Swift. Well, that's not what the season has been about thus far. On Saturday, either by coach's choice or by some sort of mysterious injury that hasn't been reported, Georgia kind of only had three running backs. In the first half against South Carolina, because of the Cook suspension, Georgia only had three running backs. Georgia has not had too many running backs really in any game as of yet. They've, for the most part, only had just enough, which is sort of another reason why the Jackson experiment here, because let's face it, as you said, it's hard to get on the field as a Georgia wide receiver right now because guys like J.J. Holloman are emerging, guys like Mecole Hardman are potential breakout stars, and so you're looking for a place to get on the field. And right now, as strange as it seems, running back has ended up being a little less deep than wide receiver is.
Yeah, no doubt. And, George has done a lot by committee. You know, there really hasn't been, a dominant back like we thought. I mean, we all maybe expected Swift to be that guy. Or, Heisman conversation in the preseason. Well, he hasn't really looked the part, and I don't know if he lacks durability or, like you said, maybe the head coach just wanted to play him two series. But that certainly seemed odd to me to take your starting tailback out after just four carries in a game against Middle Tennessee. So, there's a lot that probably goes into it. I don't think we're questioning Kirby Smart so much as we're asking questions to Kirby Smart, just to be clear. But so far, committee at running back, committee in the front seven on defense. In fact, Demetrius Robertson still doesn't even have a catch at receiver, to your point.
Yeah, exactly right. We got a lot of Georgia football talk we're going to come up with Mike Griffith here on Dog Nation Daily. Before that, though, let's celebrate some of the good news happening around UGA academics here as well. 96% of UGA undergraduate students are employed or pursuing advanced degrees within 6 months of graduation. Now, part of what makes Georgia education so impactful are the opportunities that students have beyond the walls of the classroom. All UGA students are required to engage in at least one approved experiential learning activity that enhances learning and positions them for success after graduation. The University of Georgia's Experiential Learning Initiative gives students hands-on opportunities to connect their academic foundations to the world through creative endeavors, study abroad, and field schools, internships and leadership opportunities, also faculty-mentored research and service learning. It also creates new opportunities for business nonprofits and other organizations to partner with UGA on a mutually beneficial internship. So when you donate to Georgia, you're directly supporting a lot of this kind of stuff. More of opportunities for students just like this. You're also building facilities that enable better learning. You're giving the faculty the chance to teach students outside the classroom. So here's how you can get involved further. Go to this website, give.uga.edu. It's give.uga.edu. You can build a better educational experience for people doing great things in the community, for the state of Georgia and around the world. Once they get out of UGA, you can be a part of that. Just simply go to the website, give.uga.edu. All right, Mike, let's turn our attention back to football here just for a moment. And I've got plenty more to talk to you about what's actually happening in 2018. 2018. I thought you had an interesting piece at DogNation.com yesterday on the 2019 schedule, though, for a moment. You kind of pointed out the fact that there are a lot of bye weeks for Georgia in its SEC games here. Now, Georgia's also got two byes as well before Florida and Tennessee, so it's a little bit of a weird schedule from that standpoint. But the same thing we've kind of seen from, like, say, Alabama in the past, where everybody wants to rest up the week before Bama. A lot of these SEC East foes kind of choosing to do the same thing before Georgia now, it looks like.
Yeah, five teams have bye weeks before they play Georgia. Yeah, Georgia has bye weeks before Florida and Tennessee, but guess what? Florida and Tennessee have bye weeks before Georgia, so there's no real advantage for Georgia with their two bye weeks. That said, Auburn, Missouri, and South Carolina all have a bye week before they play Georgia. And, you know, I wouldn't dismiss that quickly. I've seen some people say, oh, that doesn't matter, and just shrug, but it absolutely matters, DA. I mean, you can look at the spread in NFL games and see how that's affected. You can see how it's affected in college games. And again, from my experience, you know, covering other programs, bye weeks have a huge advantage. You know, if you get an extra week off and maybe you get three or four guys back from injuries or everybody's got their bumps and bruises, it's an extra week of preparation for coaches. You know, I think it's kind of a threat, if you will, to what I think Georgia should be a really magical, you know, 2019 season. I mean, listen, I know we're not even done with 2018, but, you know, let's be honest here. The 2019 Dogs look absolutely loaded, and maybe they'll be so good that it doesn't matter ultimately, but you can bet Kirby Smart's noticed that, and you can bet that Georgia's probably said something to the SEC office and said, hey, what gives? Why us?
Let's turn our attention back to 2018 here for a moment and something that you've written about a good bit at DogNation.com, and that's the inability of Georgia thus far to get to the quarterback and produce sacks. Now, Kirby Smart has, you know, sort of discussed the fact that Middle Tennessee State didn't provide a lot of opportunities for that. You could probably say the same thing about South Carolina, which also tried to play fast and get rid of the ball quickly, maybe Austin Peay a bit the same way. I think this is a pretty fascinating discussion because while, you know, some Georgia fans are going to say, well, as long as Georgia's winning, who cares? I do think that sacks can be a bit of a predictive stat. In other words, I think if you want to look at how a defense is trending, you can look at the sacks that it's getting here. And a team that doesn't ever start getting sacks over the course of a season, I think you're going to see some regression with the defensive performance there over the long haul. Now, at a certain point, maybe Georgia starts getting to the quarterback more when it's playing a different style of offense than what it's seen through the first three games. But I don't think it behooves a defense that wants to be great to be this weak in such a crucial area. Thus far, it's not hurt Georgia. But at a certain point in time, Mike, the Dogs got to find a way to get the quarterback more.
Well, you know, a sack is kind of a circumstantial number in that it comes typically in predictable down and distance situations, third and long. And it kind of starts with, you know, putting teams in those difficult situations. I mean, I haven't really looked that closely at it because, as you said, it hasn't become a factor for Georgia yet. It hasn't cost them a game. But, you know, how often does Georgia have teams in long down and distance situations this year? I mean, and that starts with an ability to stop the run. Ultimately, whether we're looking at sacks or whether we're looking at down and distance, what we're really talking about here is, does Georgia have a dominant front seven? And that was a question going into this year, because you lost five out of seven starters, and we talked about the nose tackle position and Johnny Atkins and all the things that, you know, him drawing double teams did to that defensive line. I do think it's a red flag. I do think there's a problem. Now, some of it has to do with teams' game plan. Certainly, they're going to get rid of the ball quickly, and they're not going to invite Georgia to come back there and sack them. But at the same time, you'd like to think that Georgia has the type of athletes up front that could win those one-on-one matchups and generate sacks. And even more disconcerting, BA, the real hidden statistic here that's the true red flag is that Georgia has only 11 tackles for loss through three games. Opponents against Georgia's vaunted offensive line have 13 tackles for loss against Georgia. So, trench play, something to keep an eye on moving forward.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, that's a surprising stat. You wouldn't expect any team to be outpacing Georgia on the field when it comes to something like that. And it's the kind of thing that think if you're a fan, you just want to see some improvement in over the course of the season. And we'll certainly keep watching that's going to happen, because when you play better offensive teams, and Georgia's got some of those coming up, you're going to have to get some negative yardage plays to offset what could be the occasional big play from another offense. But that'll be something to watch when it kind of gets here. Let me circle back, though, Mike, before we let you go, to something that we talked about a couple of minutes ago, and that's the issue with running backs. And I guess, if you don't mind me saying so, I'll slightly take issue with something that you wrote post-game at dognation.com about the state of the Georgia running backs. Let's assume, just for the sake of conversation, that Georgia does turn to Elijah Holyfield for a more expanded role, much like it did on Saturday, because of whatever with DeAndre Swift. I won't even speculate about that right now, but let me focus on Holyfield here for a moment. Speaking as a fan, and I know you know that's what I am, as a fan, I don't mind Holyfield getting big carries for Georgia. Frankly, I actually don't even mind Brian Herring getting those big carries. Would I like to have Zamir White healthy and playing? Yeah, I probably would. Would I be excited about the potential of James Cook growing into that role over the course of the season? Sure. Based on some of what I saw from a DeAndre Swift a year ago, is that a guy that I would enjoy seeing in that spot? Maybe so, and maybe I'd prefer him fully healthy over somebody else. But as a fan, all I can tell you is, if Georgia's in a close game against LSU, I don't mind Herring getting carries. I don't mind Holyfield getting carries. I actually sort of think their numbers kind of speak for themselves in that regard. How would you respond?
Well, I mean, their numbers have been good against mediocre competition. I mean, at the end of the day, are these guys that are going to beat Alabama? I don't think so. You know, I think the running back play has to improve. And, you know, look, I get it. Elijah Holyfield is a wonderful young man. I've said this. Personally, I love this guy. I think he's great. You know, I can imagine it had to be hard growing up the son of a champion with those high standards. And, you know, even him saying Evander thought he should have scored on that run instead of, you know, just patting the kid on the back and saying, way to go. I mean, really, I feel for the guy. And this is a very likable young man who has waited his turn. And, you know, of course, you want to see someone like that have success. But there's a reason he had to wait. He wasn't good enough. He's not as good as Nick Chubb. He's not as good as Sony Michel. And those are hard words. It's not aimed to be personal, but this isn't a guy you're going to see playing in the NFL on Sundays. And, you know, when push comes to shove, you know, look, Georgia's going to win the East. We know that. But our question really is this going to be good enough for Georgia to win the SEC and beat Alabama? So I'm all for Elijah Holyfield. I'm all for Brian Herring. You know, these are all great kids. They all work hard. You want to see them do well. But at the end of the day, I mean, and you know what? Maybe there's some fans that say, you know what? I like Elijah Holyfield so much, I don't even care. I'm glad to see him play, and if George doesn't beat Alabama, that's okay because he's a good kid. But I don't believe that, B.A. Right now, it's easy to say everybody's happy. Right now, you're running over Middle Tennessee and Austin Peay. I want to see what's going to happen against Auburn. I want to see what's going to happen against LSU. The eye test tells me that Georgia's run game isn't as good as last year, and neither is their defensive front seven, and that's kind of scary.
All right, Mike, that's certainly a provocative opinion. We appreciate you sharing with us. We'll also look forward to seeing you tomorrow night, 6 p.m., at the Marlows in Brookhaven for our Dog Nation Big Game Preview. More talk about the game against Missouri on Saturday, and also an announcement of our Dog Nation Invasion giveaway winner, courtesy of our friends at Marlows Tavern. Come on by. You can also register one more time to kind of get in there at Marlows tomorrow night. Anybody in red and black also gets a complimentary appetizer, courtesy of our friends at Marlows. We'll have Dog Nation giveaways as well. It's the Marlows in Brookhaven starting at 6 p.m. tomorrow with our Dog Nation Big Game Preview. 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta. That's 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta. Mike, thanks for your time. We'll look forward to reading a whole lot more from you at adognation.com, and see you in Brookhaven tomorrow night.
Look forward to it, PA.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Look, here's the thing when it comes to the running back situation. And, you know, this is one of those deals where I think reasonable people can disagree. Mike's got a strong opinion. I guess I've got a strong opinion. It sounds like our opinion is slightly at odds right now, which is fine with me. I don't have a problem with that. I think it's worth pointing out here, though, that when you talk about how a guy like Elijah Holyfield, if he was called into a larger role for Georgia, if you want to talk about how he would perform in that larger role against the better teams that Georgia's going to play, these are all predictions right now. And Georgia would not be the first team to ever say, okay, in 2017, we had Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. Now those guys are gone. We've got to turn to a new guy in 2018. Just because Elijah Holyfield's been waiting his turn doesn't mean that he's naturally going to be inferior when called upon there at that time. I mean, he's averaging, what, like 9 yards a carry right now, something along those lines? That's obviously helped by a 66-yard run on Saturday. I'm not telling you that Holyfield's a Heisman Trophy candidate. All I'm saying, as a fan of this team, and from this standpoint, I'm speaking from the obviously the emotional standpoint here, as a fan of this team, if DeAndre Swift ever did get hurt, and you told me I got to go to a Baton Rouge to watch my team play on the road against a very good LSU defense, my starting tailback's Elijah Holyfield, and getting the second most carries behind him is Brian Herrien, all I can tell you is that is a scenario that I would be fine with. Would I like to have a healthy Zamir White? I'd love to. Would I like to have a healthy DeAndre Swift, assuming for whatever reason he wasn't? Absolutely, I would love to. But if attrition happens, and in a lot of seasons it's going to happen, and you turn to Elijah Holyfield, that's a young man that I am more than happy to put my trust in. Not going to guarantee it's going to work out the way we all wanted to. All I'm telling you is I ain't worried about Holyfield if he ever gets into that spot, if you'll pardon me for the bad grammar. With that said, let me mention that tomorrow, one of my favorite days on Dog Nation Daily, because we get to do our MyBookie Best Bets, I give you my thoughts on what is, I got to tell you, a pretty compelling crop of SEC games for this upcoming Saturday. For now, though, let me remind you that you know, whether it's end of regular season baseball, college football, whatever, the place to kind of get in on the action is at MyBookie. They are the place where the pros play because of the known as the fast, no hassle payout when you win. Let's face it, that's what really matters. And right now, you want to make sure you use that promo code Dog Nation. It's all one word, spelled the way it's supposed to be, DAWG. Use the promo code Dog Nation. Simply find MyBookie online. MyBookie. Find MyBookie online. Use the promo code Dog Nation, and you can get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar. But you got to do it right now. Find the folks at MyBookie online. Use the promo code Dog Nation, and you are in, and you could have your first deposit matched dollar for dollar. We'll do our MyBookie best bets on the show tomorrow. One of the things I've been meaning to get to for a couple of days, some of y'all were mad that I haven't brought this up sooner. So South Carolina had its game canceled last Saturday for a very serious reason. We won't make fun or laugh about that. But what we will kind of make fun and laugh about is the aftermath of that. South Carolina trying to get this game rescheduled. And Gamecocks don't want to play on their bye week because that'd mean playing 10 straight weeks. The subject came up of, well, how about the first Saturday in December? And Gamecocks coach Will Muschamp said, we plan on being busy then. And listen, you know, not to be too sensitive about stuff like this, but can you let a little more time pass between getting drubbed by Georgia and then talking about maybe kind of getting back into contention for the SEC East? Can you put a little distance between those two events here? Because that's actually the last time we saw South Carolina on the field, was getting it handed to them sideways by Georgia there that day. So, from that standpoint, I don't know that's exactly what Will Muschamp ought to be saying. Some of you certainly had some fun with that, and I kind of understand why. Something else that's been kind of fun here is Mississippi State-Kentucky is turning into a sneaky good game on Saturday here. Kind of excited about that. We got a little war of words between the two running backs here. Benny Snell for Kentucky. Is it Kai Hill? Is it the guy's name? Yeah, for Mississippi State. Let me show you the first tweet here from kind of the back and forth here. I believe this is the Kai Hill tweet, the Mississippi State running back. Ben Roberts quotes, that's a reporter there in Kentucky, quotes Benny Snell as saying that he was ready to run on any team that Kentucky plays. That offense doesn't fear anybody. And Kylan Hill kind of gives you a whole bunch of, like, laughing emojis on that. That's the Mississippi State running back. I think he may have later deleted that tweet, but nonetheless, kind of having some fun at Benny Snell's expense. And then Snell on Twitter, the very good Wildcats running back, fires back in sort of a subtweet way. This sort of turns the heat up. Benny Snell says, you a clown over the internet, I show up in real life, which I do have to sort of respect Snell for that attitude there and that response. Part of me wants to say, can you imagine any Georgia player ever doing this before a game with anybody? This just seems so foreign for me that any players will be doing this pregame. But nonetheless, it makes Kentucky, Mississippi State actually probably feel a little bit more fun on Saturday. In a weird way, it's also like, who are these people to be talking trash? Snell has been pretty good. Kylan Hill, I've never heard of. All of a sudden, Mississippi State wants to act like it's, the 85 Bears. I mean, frankly, they're kind of the Kentucky of the SEC West, and all of a sudden now they're sort of strutting into Lexington on Saturday. This entire ordeal is, I think, pretty fascinating. I actually kind of can't wait for this game. One more story for the SEC to get to here, and then I'm going to get a few more comments into the program here today to sort of satisfy a request that I got the other day. ESPN does something kind of cool each week. Speaking of MyBookie and getting bets down on games, ESPN does its college football better ranks. These are kind of the way that Vegas views the top 25 in comparison to how the actual top 25 works. And Alabama number one on this, Georgia number two. That's not different than the AP poll necessarily. I will say that Alabama sort of extended its lead over Georgia in the so-called better ranks from ESPN this week, for whatever it's worth. Alabama gaining confidence from betters here. Georgia, though, still looking pretty solid. Something to remember about Auburn, by the way. Even though they lost to LSU on Saturday, bettors haven't soured on Auburn too much as of yet. Auburn's still seventh in the so-called better ranks poll from ESPN. You do have Mississippi State at eight there, so bettors do like Mississippi State at the moment. LSU at 11 right now, so it's kind of funny. LSU wins the game on the road against Auburn, and yet the betting market still favors Auburn over LSU. I kind of like this kind of stuff. As I've said before, one of the things that fascinates me about the betting market is it's a group of people that put their money where their mouth is. You know, a lot of times in shows like this, people like me just sort of spout off whatever, and, you know, no one ever really holds us to account if we're wrong. But if a bettor, you know, says one thing and he's wrong, that's money out of his wallet there. So bettors like Georgia, but for the moment like Alabama a little bit better, and no pun intended, and we'll make that your SEC through. And now let me kind of fully turn my attention back to Georgia here for a moment here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. One of the things that somebody said to me yesterday was, hey, BA, remember when you used to do more comments during the actual broadcast portion of the show? Can you get back to doing that from time to time? I don't know that I can do that every day. I am going to try to do that a little bit today here, at least for a moment, squeeze in a couple of comments a little earlier than we typically would here. A couple subjects that I want to kind of hit on here for a moment. To kind of go back to what Mike Griffith was reporting here on our show a little earlier about what Kirby Smart had to say about Andrew Thomas yesterday. You know, still maybe a little bit hobbled, maybe not the guy that starts for Georgia at left tackle on Saturday, turning to Cade Mays once again. While I need Thomas back if I'm Georgia by the time you get to the most important games you play this season, I'm sort of okay with Mays again against Missouri, because if the rest of the game film for Mays is reflective of what we saw in those two moments when he got the hold and then didn't block on the hit on Fromm that turned into a fumble, you know, it's sort of like getting off falling off of a horse. You're supposed to sort of hop back and get right back on again. I think that's a good chance for Mays to get back on the horse on the road in an SEC game on Saturday against Missouri, because the fact of the matter is, and I'm going to say this a lot this week, I don't think Missouri is good enough to test Georgia. So while I don't think Georgia should just start every freshman that has, starting Mays again as a freshman at left tackle, letting him get some more sort of on-field experience, I don't think that's such a bad thing necessarily, especially if that gets Andrew Thomas a week closer to being healthy for the games that really matter coming up. And Georgia's got some games that are really going to matter very soon on the horizon here. Let me also get a comment here from Bruce Eklund, who weighed in our Facebook comment section a little earlier. Something that Bruce said I thought was really interesting. We're talking about with Mike Griffith before about Georgia not getting enough sacks, and he said, hey, the numbers that I care more about, this is Bruce on Facebook, the numbers that I care more about are the turnovers. Are you getting fumbles? Are you getting interceptions? And I kind of understand that a bit. I think that this is where some of the, you know, advanced stats analytics stuff kind of become kind of interesting. I quoted some of these on the show yesterday, and what the advanced stats people will tell you is that for the most part, turnovers are fairly unpredictable. From one week to the next, one season to the next, one half of the season to the second half of the season, who's going to recover the most fumbles, who's going to get the most interceptions. For the most part, that's kind of a crapshoot. No one really knows. But the one thing that does seem to impact turnovers more than any other individual play are sacks. That the one thing that you can do to recover more fumbles and potentially get more interceptions is really lay the wood to a quarterback there. It's not a perfect correlation one-to-one, but certainly a lot of sacks makes the other thing easier there. So it's not an alarm bell for me yet that Georgia's not sacking the quarterback too much, but if we're in November and it's still not happening, then the Georgia defense is probably less than it otherwise could have been. All right, we will wrap up here the way we always do. Y'all know I love to do it every single day. We like the Gatorator Countdown presented by Marco's Pizza. And 38 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville for the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. We think they beat the lousy, stinking Gators again. It's 38 days from right now. It is our Gatorator Countdown right here on a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. One more point I wanted to also mention before we wrap up our show here today. We talked a little bit yesterday about the possibility that Mecole Hardman, on the heels of a very fast start here to 2018, could become a Heisman Trophy contender at some point in time. I guess to sort of validate that point maybe a little bit here, and I'll admit this is probably a bit of a reach, but to slightly validate that point, ESPN has its sort of power poll Heisman predictor here. 10 people vote, 1 through 5. Hardman did get a 5th place vote from one of the voters this week. We don't know which one it was, but there you have it, a 5th place vote for Hardman, and we'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily.